This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House segment. Welcome to the show, Dr. George Lee. How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm very excited.
Why?
Well, it's tomorrow, right? It's countdown, one more day.
I know.
And we're going to have our exciting event.
It's the BFM Health and Living Live 2018, which, you know, you're going to be there. You're going to be co-moderating.
So yes. Does that mean I'm not allowed to give too much of my opinion?
No, you're not.
All right. So I get to do the interrogating rather than being interrogated by you.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm looking forward to that because okay. Now I'm on the other side of the bench.
Of the fence, yes. So if you haven't got your tickets, you know, log on to bfm.my/health event and, you know, we want to see you there tomorrow.
Are you going to give us a little bit of sneak preview of what's going to happen on the event? Because, you know, we're going to have all the Klang Valley listening this afternoon and all eager to join. And then, you know, some people haven't even registered yet.
Okay.
What sort of things do we kind of teasing and tell us what's on the menu?
Well, guess what? It's World Health Day tomorrow.
Indeed.
And the WHO has declared this. And every year, last year it was Depression, Let's Talk was mm-hmm. the theme. This year it's Universal Health Coverage. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to look at is a future-focused health and care system
right.
here in Malaysia. So we've got five sessions lined up. The first one being on healthcare financing,
uh-huh.
whether or not we can continue to just pay 5 ringgit or 1 ringgit in government hospitals. And is this sustainable in the
yes.
long run?
Great
considering
question.
That we're the fattest nation in Southeast Asia.
Which you repeatedly tell the whole nation.
All the time. Second session is on cancer. There's going to be more of a focus on end-of-life care.
Yes.
I think a lot of us are afraid to talk about death and palliative care.
Yeah. Typical pantang thing to talk
yes.
about.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, it sounds morbid, but I think that discussion needs to be had, and we will do that at 11 a.m. Tomorrow. Then after that, after lunch, we have a session on medico-legal issues. So
yes.
if you have any questions, you can ask your questions. And that panel is going to be moderated by Uma, our very own Uma Pagan.
That's right.
And then fourth session on aging. We want to celebrate aging. We want to talk about the ethics of aging and what all of this means. Dr. Mahadev Shankar, our former Court of Appeal judge, is going to be there to share his experience aging. And it's going to be moderated by BFM's Melissa Idris.
Yeah.
So you want to be there. And of course, the last session, George, is with the both of us on intimacy in the digital age. Exactly.
I am so looking forward to that.
I don't know whether I am, but... But we'll get through it.
That's right.
Come and join us tomorrow. If you haven't registered, once again, bfm.my/health event from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So, in view of World Health Day, which is tomorrow, we have in the studio with us at the very last minute, and she managed to clear her diary for us, is the head of mission and WHO representative to Malaysia, Brunei Darussalam, and Singapore, Dr. Loh Ying Ru, also known as Jacqueline. Welcome
yes.
to the show, Jacqueline. How are you today?
I'm very privileged
to have you on. I know we've not had WHO on.
That's right. That's like that. We always quote WHO figures. And then today you're in the hot seat. So we are so, so honored.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for coming. You know, I was reading, Dr. Ying, that it's the WHO's 70th birthday tomorrow. You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to be here. And I'm really excited to be here one day before World Health Day.
Mm-hmm.
as you said, 70th anniversary of World Health Organization, that was 1948. This was just when the world was recovering from war.
The World War.
From the World War. And that's when governments created the World Health Organization, looked global international organizations to attain the highest standard for health for
right.
all.
Right. So 70 yeah. years ago, mm-hmm. after obviously the trauma of World War II, WHO was born. What was at that time, you know, what was the aim? Presumably just to make sure that the whole global health is kept on check and then everybody is, obviously having this utopia of living healthy and longer life. Mm-hmm. Was that the aim?
Yes, so the aim was actually, it's in our constitution, that we wanted to have, or the member states, the governments wanted to have an organization devoted to global health, aiming for the highest attainable standard of health as a fundamental right to every human being.
Mm. Do you think you've achieved much of that, though?
Yeah, 70 years down the line.
Yeah.
I do think so. So, and I would say this World Health Day is special.
Indeed.
One, indeed, because it's the 70th birthday. And second, because we are talking about universal health coverage. And let me tell you why I think we have made good progress. We have, for example, we have eradicated smallpox.
Yes.
And may I just give an example that, for example, Malaysia had eradicated smallpox 1 year ahead before WHO announced that it was eradicated globally.
Wow.
So that's great, isn't it?
It is.
Absolutely.
And also, we are probably looking at eradication of polio globally. Mm-hmm. So we have made significant achievements.
Right, okay.
But then again, you now are challenged by a whole load of other new diseases. How do you decide what you want to champion at the WHO?
Well, WHO makes its decision based on the World Health Assembly. And the World Health Assembly is formed by the governments, the ministries of health, and they look at the data.
Right.
So WHO is like a big data warehouse. We look at the facts. So what are the causes of deaths, of morbidity, the ratios? And there is a discussion every year at the World Health Assembly how the global program of work of WHO should work, what would be the priorities, and each of the countries decides then within that where their priorities lie.
Now, for example, last year, obviously, mental health was the key issue that has been decided by the member state and the member's country. And just matter of interest for the layperson here, you know, we probably covered that theme of mental health advancement and focus. And what sort of like mileage or what sort of advancement would you achieve in that 1 year whenever you bring this into the limelight?
Well, it's difficult to measure that in 1 year. But for example, for universal health coverage, which is the theme of
this year,
we have started a process of annual reporting, and in fact, in 2017, at the end of last year, WHO has released a global report, together actually with the World Bank, a global report on the baselines for measuring universal health coverage, with a set of measures which are comparable across countries.
Oh.
And the same for Asia and the Pacific. There are reports specific to this part of the world which compare the achievements across the different countries.
Yeah.
And
well,
I think that's very important. So we put that into place, and mental health is one of the tracer indicators for that.
Next year, it's a good thing, isn't it?
Because essentially what WHO is doing, looking at current state of play of mental health last year, for example, and then in different pockets of areas that we can improve on, set targets, and then so individual countries or member states actually have a direction to aim for.
I think that, you know, the depression talk was really timely, and I think the British Royals coming out and talking about it. I mean, the whole world, a lot of people, you know, prominent people were coming out and talking about it.
And clearly, that breaks taboo, right? You
know,
from last year. So, like you said, it's difficult to make a quantifiable measurement of the outcome in 1 year, but the impact is so lasting for many, many generations.
Also, I think that the conversations must continue beyond that 1 year, isn't it?
Indeed.
Yeah. Speaking of indexes, Dr. Ying, in terms of coverage of essential health services, Malaysia scores 70 on the WHO's index. What is it and what does that mean?
So maybe let me explain how WHO has proposed to measure progress on universal health coverage across the different countries. And so health service coverage is one of the tracer indicators. It looks at special services, but by no means all services. And Malaysia has an indicator of 70, which is quite good. So if you compare it to other countries in the Asia-Pacific region, there's, for example, Australia there. So, and that combined with financial risk protection, Malaysia is also doing very well. Actually, the current data say that hardly no one has thrown into poverty because of healthcare cost. Because globally, Malaysia is considered of having or being one of the middle-income countries or upper-middle-income countries which has achieved universal health coverage.
Mm. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
What does that mean? Does that mean people get health coverage for free necessarily, or what does that really mean?
Well, let me go back to universal health coverage. It's really about health being a human right, that no one should get sick and die just because they are poor or because they cannot access the health services they need. So these two things are the priorities. Mm-hmm. The funding, so not no poverty, second, access to services.
Right.
So if we look at that, definitely it doesn't mean that healthcare should be free. So let me give you an example. If we look at spending for health in developed countries, $7 out of $10 is spent by government or social health insurance for health, and $3 out of $10 is spent out of pocket mm-hmm. or by private health insurance. Mm-hmm. In middle income countries, is $5 government and social health insurance, and the other $5 by the individual or private health insurance.
Right.
That means no country has 100% free health care. There is always a component
because that's
of
almost
spending.
A utopia that is difficult to achieve, right?
Yes. Just to go back, universal health coverage doesn't mean free health care. It means access to services and that no one should fall into poverty because of healthcare costs.
If I get this right, in a kind of very simple term, what you're saying that Malaysia is ranked 70 because poverty that prevent you to have access to healthcare is not, it is actually not an issue. And also anybody in the time of need for you to gain access to healthcare, it's always there for you. Is that in a simple term? Is that what Malaysian being ranked 70, not so high, not so low, in the middle when it comes to access to healthcare in the overall population?
Yeah, so health service coverage.
It's health service coverage.
And financial risk protection.
Yes. Okay. I think
those are the two main indicators.
So let's just maybe to explain, the highest is in Asia Pacific is around 80 or a little bit above 80.
Let me guess,
70,
that's Singapore.
Close to 80, that's Australia.
Australia. Okay.
Okay.
Singapore is doing well. Wow, we always
they
love
are also
to do
high,
this.
Singapore.
We always love to do this kind of like across the causeway comparison.
Service
oh,
coverage,
no, do hit us. What is the ranking of Singapore? What sort of like, what sort of parameters? It's probably quite close to Australia rather than close to us, right?
Service coverage in Singapore is also very high, at a similar rate. In terms of financial protection, Malaysia is doing a little bit better. Mm-hmm. The healthcare costs are much higher in Singapore.
All right. Okay.
But all the countries, developed countries in particular, where healthcare costs are much higher than here, they are all working on improving the system and constantly adapting to the changing pattern of diseases, the healthcare needs of the people.
Yeah.
So constant work and progress everywhere.
We're discussing universal health coverage because it's a theme for World Health Day 2018, which is tomorrow. In the studio with us, we have Head of Mission and WHO Representative to Malaysia, Brunei Darussalam, and Singapore, Dr. Lo Ying Ru, Jacqueline, and Dr. George Lee, Consultant Urologist. Mm-hmm. When we come back, I want to find out a little bit more. We say that, Dr. Ying has explained to us how health service coverage and financial risk protection is important. How does Malaysia fare? Number one, with a recent report by UNICEF to say that, there is a very high prevalence of underweight and stunting among the urban poor children. And there was another report last year that told us that half of our cancer patients are financially challenged in the first year upon diagnosis because they cannot afford the treatment. So how does all of that fall into this? We'll come back and find out up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with us. We're discussing universal health coverage this World Health Day, which is, tomorrow. 7th of April. And in studio also with us, Dr. Lo Ying Ru. She's Jacqueline, Head of Mission and WHO Representative to Malaysia, Brunei Darussalam and Singapore. So we're discussing universal health coverage. I think Dr. Ying has explained to us what that really is. It does not necessarily necessarily mean free health services for everybody, but how do we, you know, attain this balance of health service coverage as well as making it affordable to everyone? Dr. Ying, you mentioned that we've done quite well in Malaysia. Even over the years, you've spoken about smallpox eradication. We're doing well in terms of trying to eradicate polio. What else has Malaysia done well, according to the WHO standards?
Well, Malaysia has a very wide network of health facilities, both public mm-hmm. facilities and private facilities. So there are several thousand health centers and clinics, both in the public sector and the yes. private sector. You have hospitals, you have mobile clinics. Yes. So I think Malaysia has done pretty well in terms of access and making efforts to improve the access. What I think Malaysia is also doing well, that they're thinking about how to enhance primary health care. I think that's a very good idea.
So what you're saying yeah. is that our infrastructure is there, and also we are quite forward-thinking in a lot yes. of future planning. I read a few, probably a few months ago, that we apparently have to take pride in several parameters. Number one, our maternal death apparently is quite impressive in terms of its statistics, that it's extremely low, comparable with Western figures.
The maternal mortality.
Yeah, mortality, that's mm-hmm. right. And the other thing which apparently is we have to take pride of, apparently, is that the amount of money we spend and with the outcome of the quality of healthcare apparently is we're quite efficient in a way, that's right. So, okay, I can take, you know, those compliment that Malaysia is doing well. But I'm sure there are a lot of areas that we need to improve on. In the WHO's viewpoint, what are the key areas do you think Malaysia are a little bit lagging behind? And perhaps if you sometimes influence a ministry in terms of trying to encourage them to focus on what are the, let's say, top three areas that you will focus on?
Not lagging, Lau. Just we can do better.
We can do better, right? To defer success.
Well, that's a difficult question you may have to ask your government, but looking at it from the outside, I think I understand that the government of Malaysia has started the process of thinking how to transform the health system to cater in the future to the increasing burden of non-communicable diseases,
right.
And also that people are aging, they living longer. So the healthcare spending in Malaysia, as in other countries in the region, will inevitably increase, yeah. and Malaysia will have to prepare for that.
Yeah. So essentially, you mentioned these three topics that mm-hmm. we, you know, at BFM also quite, concerned about. Mm-hmm. Which that's why we're featuring in our discussion tomorrow in our Health and Living event.
Tomorrow, right? How can we do better? I mean, how should we approach this problem, Dr. Ying? Because if you say everybody is, you know, going through the same issues and challenges, how do we do that? Mm-hmm. Cost of medicines is going up. Great research and development coming out in the field of medicine, which, you know, is so unaffordable to many people. How do we create this ecosystem which is sustainable for everybody?
Well, there is no one size fits all. I think what is important is when the system is transforming, to pay attention to leaving no one behind, that there is financial protection for all, and sustain this situation as it is also in the future, and that there's access to primary health care, to services. Mm. So these two things, I think, are very important, not to forget that, not to think only about the tertiary level innovation,
right?
What you're mentioning.
So what you're suggesting is that all the basic things that at least we need to get that in order first, and then anything that's kind of like a new technology, new advancement in medicine, perhaps that will be something to be resolved later on.
Would it be?
Well, I didn't say that. I'm saying that in whatever direction you go and what you include in your benefit package, for which the government or other mechanisms will pay for, don't cause poverty right. in the families who access health care. So there should be access for all to the services of they need in a country without being thrown into poverty. And that's the complexity. It's linked to health systems, it's to financing, to services, access to medicines, and also, very importantly, to capacity of healthcare workers trained and motivated.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned poverty because, poverty and access to healthcare is the theme this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, earlier on, Mira highlighted the statistics by UNICEF about the poverty in children.
Urban poor.
Yeah. Are the potential time bomb in some way of these generations of forgotten children that have malnutrition or perhaps brewing non-communicable diseases in the future. So are we expecting some degree of, you know, surge in all these non-communicable problems such as diabetes and heart disease and hypertension, strokes and that sort of thing in the future if we actually believe in the UNICEF's statistics?
Well, the UNICEF report was interviewing urban poor households, criteria was having how many children, and the results actually mirror the data generated in the ministry. So they showed, for example, that in those households, about, I think, 20% of children were overweight or obese. And if you look at the general data of the ministry, it's probably a little bit less, about 10%. But then when these children grow up and go older, in the overall population, the obesity and overweight and obesity altogether is about 40 to 50% of the adult population in Malaysia. So, I think it just gives an indication. And this UNICEF report, I think, what I liked in that it's showed the link between income level, education level, and malnutrition.
Yes.
So that's something where to engage in, and there is room for looking at the last population or a population which is vulnerable and try to make efforts to make their lives better.
Yeah.
And I think it's a global problem, isn't it? I mean, 70% of the world's population is going to be living in cities going forward. And that's another area that we really need to focus on in terms of their well-being and access and everything else that goes along with it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, presumably, you know, when you have the theme of universal access and these urban poor new generations are the key demographic that you want to target so that they will not be forgotten in terms of access to healthcare as well. How do you think, what sort of role do you think WHO will play, the government will play, and also us, you know, in terms of public awareness and media should play in order to help some of these demographic in the poverty stricken environment to still have access to healthcare?
Well, let me just cite one figure. So poverty in Malaysia is ranked at 0.4%. It's very low.
So, how do you define poverty under the WHO World Bank?
Well, that I have to check for you.
Sure.
So I'm sorry, I can't.
But it
give
is
you
a universal
exact,
statistic
it's,
that they
it's
define.
It's a recognized way how to define the statistics, and that Malaysia is ranking really very very low there.
Okay,
so,
so it's
doing
very
well.
Doing very well.
I think that's important to mention up front.
Okay.
So WHO is and the World Bank and other organizations are working on health policy financing with countries, many countries. And that's a major agenda item on universal health coverage and also of the World Health Assembly. So we're looking at different financing options, looking at better data which inform how health funds are being spent, so for what and for whom.
Okay.
So it's important to have good data.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. It's also your 40th anniversary of the Alma Ata Declaration. It's an opportunity to sort of reaffirm the importance of primary healthcare coverage under the universal health coverage. We seem to be a very tertiary-focused, I always talk about this. Mm-hmm. I really think our primary healthcare system is weak and we can do a lot more. Mm-hmm. When I have a cough and the flu, I tend to want to go and see a specialist. Why do I do that? how do we strengthen the primary healthcare system?
Well, I've seen some very interesting projects actually here in Malaysia, and I had the opportunity to visit a health center with a family medicine specialist in Sarawak. And at the same time when I visited the center, there was actually a group from a health center in West Malaysia visiting the center and to learn about that. Mm. So what I saw is, in spite of the long waiting times and that when we spoke to patients, they loved it. Mm. They loved it. I mean, the doctors were complaining they had too much work and the nurses, but overall they were happy because their patients were happy. Mm. So I think this is something which could be explored further, and I think there are efforts on its way. There are 20 clinics where this concept is being piloted. So I hope that there is commitment to scale that up nationwide.
Yes. Yeah.
How does a government sort of balance healthcare spending with expenditure? Because any amount of budget, in my opinion, is never
going to be enough, right?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about Malaysia spending just less than 5% of GDP on healthcare. The US spending, what, close to 15%, I think? Mm. I mean, that's like four times more. Doesn't necessarily mean they're doing better in the US compared to here, Dr. Ying. Where do you think we can, you know, not be too dependent on government? Government has its role when it comes to healthcare, but how does everybody else play a part in this as well?
Well, let me cite the figures again that in developed countries, $7 out of $10 are spent by the government and social health insurance for healthcare, and 3 out of 10 by the individuals, either out of pocket or private health insurance. And in middle income countries, it's $5 by public funding and $5 by private funding. So there will always be a responsibility also to pay a little bit, but it should not come to a situation where people are thrown into poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are many ways and many options to sustain. Number one of the options, of course, is in countries which have benefited from economic growth to increase spending for health. Another option is to look at the quality for what is the money spent. That's also very important. The other is to look at how to make services more efficient, that they serve more the population and the population needs. Mm. And the last thing is maybe also to look how to engage the community more into healthcare.
Right. And like what you said, enhancing the primary healthcare in order to make healthcare a little bit less tertiary and then accessible in the community.
I mean, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, I can come across as being very mean by saying this, but I'm just going to ask you both. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is is so highly subsidized in this country, public healthcare system, right?
Yes.
Do you think then we sort of neglect our health because we know that it's not going to cost us very much to access healthcare in the country? If we had to pay a little bit more, do you think we'll be a little bit more take on our health responsibilities?
You know what you're going to do now? You're going to invite a lot of people ringing up and say, Mira, how can you say that?
No, I'm just asking.
I agree with you.
I am asking. You know, so even if I have government pays 50% and we have to pay 50%, it's sort of like you don't take it for granted. It's not all government's fault or all government's responsibility to look after your health.
It is true. Well, I can cite you some examples, perhaps in the UK setting. In the UK setting, NHS obviously is heavily, heavily funded by the government, and it's from taxation. When in scenario like that, people take it for granted. For example, as a doctor, when you get the appointment system that people book appointments, they just don't turn up. and then each time that people don't turn up is a missed opportunity for other patients. And also these are wastage and hemorrhage that could be avoided, like you highlighted earlier on, that healthcare in many ways can be more efficient to serve more people. And unfortunately, we actually have something that kind of did not attend rate in NHS system is so high that it is one of the major hemorrhage that is a wastage. So why? It boils down to, like you said, it's all paid for already, and people don't value how precious that healthcare is.
Absolutely. And you said something about the tax system, right? So let's just say, you know, a lot of us are paying taxes. Those of us who are paying taxes, or even for those who are not paying taxes, those of us who are healthy are now going to be subsidizing those who are not looking after themselves. Right. That's a little an imbalance there as well, don't you think, Dr. Yang? I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I must say that in Malaysia, as in other middle-income countries, about 60% is paid by public spending, by the government, and 40% in the private sector, out of pocket. So the fact that people are spoiled in Malaysia because everything is free is not true. Secondly, I'm not sure what data suggests that if you miss your doctor's appointment, that you don't care about it. So I would really like to know whether this is a true high statement. So I would think that that would require a more careful analysis to say that in a country like the UK, whether they are spoiling their population because they take care through this NHS system. I think it's a little bit too simplistic.
It is. Well, it's obviously an anecdotal, presentations. However, this can be, it's just like a perception that sometimes people take things for granted.
But I think what I'm really trying to get at is that people need to take responsibility of their health as well, to a very large extent.
Yeah, and also, in some way, the latter part of what Mira was saying is that for those people who generally do take good care of their health, perhaps should be rewarded with some sort of like taxation relief, and then also for people who genuinely try to avoid creating a burden for the government's healthcare system in the future.
Incentivize. What about public health campaigns? A lot of countries invest in public health campaigns. How do you think? Do you think these campaigns have been very successful, Dr. Yang?
Well, I do think public health campaigns are important and remain important. They create awareness in the general public about what behaviors mean to come to good health. For example, leaving bottles around and having all kinds of bowls where you water can aggregate and mosquitoes can breed and you have a lot of dengue fever. So
indeed,
that's I think it's important to have these kind of campaigns. But campaigns should be very well designed. There should be no conflict of interest. They should not be sponsored by companies who have commercial interests. So we have to be very careful when public campaigns are designed. Yes, they are an important public health tool.
Okay. All right. Plain packaging for cigarettes, for an example. Is that a public health campaign, would you say? To a very large extent, quite successful in some countries like Australia. They've done pretty well.
And we're going for the kiddie packs.
And we're going for the kiddie packs. Okay, let's.
So on that note, we move along.
We will move along. So this year, Dr. Yang, there are plans, the WHO has plans to challenge all countries to take at least 3 steps towards universal health coverage. Do we know what those are, or can we sort of know what those are so we can hold our policymakers accountable for this?
Well, I think, let's say, the 2 priorities are really to work on the health systems, to leave no one behind. Mm-hmm. Number one is financial risk protection. Number 2 is access to health services, in particular primary health care. So these are the most important points I would like to make and we are working on. But others are access to medicines and also to have a well-capacitated, trained and motivated health workforce. Mm. We shouldn't forget that.
Yeah. I mean, Jacqueline, obviously it's 70 years since the birth of WHO. Clearly has a lot of influence in the landscape of health globally. The healthcare status in 70 years ago, it's obviously a very, very different scenario compared to today. Mm-hmm. Because during that time, we saw mumps, we saw polio, and we saw smallpox. Mm-hmm. And we move quantum leaps mm-hmm. 70 years down the line. I mean, obviously, every year you come up with themes. If you were to say, what challenges do we face or WHO will face in the next 70 years? Mm. What is your crystal ball telling you? What sort of like world will we see, and what sort of challenges will we face as a advisor and also as an important person in WHO? What do you predict that healthcare will face in the next 70 years?
I mean, you never dreamt that you would have to deal with overnutrition today. It was always malnutrition.
Yeah,
and I mean,
after World War II, yeah. People were struck by malnutrition, insufficient food, different countries.
True.
We went through the 90s era of, world famine in different African countries. But now in many, many countries, it's the other way around. And so 70 years down the line, we see that shift, we see that change. We saw HIV, kind of like being in some way treated as chronic diseases. In many ways, cancer is taking these kind of like front line, although there are a lot of advancement in vaccination and things. What sort of like key areas in healthcare that are the challenges that you see in the next 70 years?
Well, as you already alluded to, health needs are constantly changing. They're transforming, and we have to react to that. We have to predict that so that we are prepared 10, 20 years down the line. And the major burden will be on non-communicable diseases, and the majority of them due to consequences of risk factors like overweight, obesity, diabetes, hypertension. So you will have more people with sort of heart diseases, cardiovascular diseases, as we say, in the medical field. It will increase, and the ratio of this kind of diseases compared to infectious diseases is now 6-1.
Mm.
And so there are predictions, and let's just look at diabetes. Cost for managing diabetes was about in 2004 was about 10% of the health budget. So let's say it doubles 20 years down the line. So it will cause a lot of strain on the health budget if the cost raises, right? And diabetes is increasing every year, although the majority are let's say nearly half are not diagnosed, but it's increasing. So that's a lot of things to come.
The two things that I always get concerned about, it's like, in our previous generations, our parents' parents have so many children. And in a way, at some point we were worried about we're overpopulated, but now we're seeing also, downsizing of family. And then on the other hand, we have an aging population in many, many countries. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee that potentially can be something that can be a challenge for global health in the future?
Well, definitely. I mean, the older people get and the longer they live, they have more chronic diseases and also handicaps. You have to look at aging and caring facilities more than before, and that costs money.
Yeah.
Definitely costs money. And just we are there is a study which was conducted in Johor, and they looked at interviewing community and looking at their health priorities. And one, it revealed two priorities. One was breast cancer screening, and the other breast cancer treatment, screening and treatment. And the other one was aging, looking at families. Okay. And they have actually introduced breast cancer screening in primary healthcare settings, and they also have established facilities to look after elderly people. And I think this is something which is nice. You know, you work with your community, identify their priorities and health needs, and respond to that.
Yeah. And because our culture of dealing with aging population is very, very different to Western culture, because, you know, we have more family-based orientation. So I'm really, really pleased that, you know, tomorrow's event, you know, cancer and also aging will be one of the key topics. Isn't that right, Mira?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think with aging, 15% of our population will be 65 years and above by 2035. And that would mean we would be an aging population. I think that's one in six of us will be above the age of 65. Yes. And if we don't do anything about it now,
it's going to hit
us hard.
And we have really renowned panelists talking about aging tomorrow.
Yes,
is that right?
Dr. Tan Maupin, our consultant geriatrician.
Very, very articulate. And you're going to enjoy her sense of humor.
And we also have
a gerontologist
on as well from UPM, who will tell us what's happening in Malaysia, because there's so much to take into consideration when it comes to aging, our culture, our religion, you know, so many things. Ethnicity, how we all age is so different from the other. But George and I have got Dr. Tan Maupin booked as our geriatrician.
That's right, because I'm going to live up to 200 years old, so I need to get her booked now.
She needs to live beyond that.
<That's right. laughs> You know, this is amazing that we choose a date to have the event in concurrent with World Health Day.
Yep, absolutely.
All right.
Yep. Would you have a message for us this World Health Day, Dr. Ying?
Well, I would maybe just to reiterate the World Health Day team, universal health coverage. It means health for all and everywhere, leaving no one behind, emphasizing that people are not thrown into poverty because they cannot pay for healthcare costs, and that they have access to the services they need.
Mm.
I think with that in mind, I think we continue to do better, even though we're 70th on the ranking. I think, you know, several years down the line, we'll continue to see that improving.
We will, for sure.
Oh, we will, for sure.
Keep talking about it. Thank you very much for joining us today, talking to us about universal health coverage this World Health Day. You know what? If you now text me your name and your IC number, we will give you a pair of tickets to the BFM Health and Living Live event tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Do that now. It's 018-789-8899. All I need is your name and your IC number. Thank you very much for joining us today. That was Dr. Lo Ying Ru, Head of Mission and WHO Representative to Malaysia, Brunei Darussalam and Singapore, together with Dr. George Lee, Consultant Urologist. See you tomorrow, George. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.